Our first reading tonight is from Alain de Botton. He's a Swiss philosopher, atheist, and theologian. In one sense, he is a child of the new atheists. You know those names, Dawkins, Hitchens, perhaps you know A.C. Grayling. He believes in an aggressive attempt to spread the word about atheism and other skeptics. However, unlike them, he argues that there is much that they can still learn from religion. One of these is what he calls an agape restaurant, a meal akin to the Christian Eucharist, and this piece is from his work, Religion for Atheists.
Taking their seats at an agape restaurant, guests would find in front of them guidebooks, somewhat reminiscent of the Jewish Haggadah or the Catholic Missal, laying out the rules for how to behave at the meal. No one would be left alone to find their way to an interesting conversation with another. The Book of Agape would direct diners to speak to one another for prescribed lengths of time on predefined topics. These talking points would be carefully crafted for a specific purpose, to coax guests away from customary expressions of light conversation and towards a more sincere revelation of themselves. What do you regret? Whom do you not forgive? What do you fear? The liturgy would inspire charity in the deepest sense, a capacity to respond with complexity and compassion to the existence of our fellow creatures. One would be privy to accounts of fear, guilt, rage, melancholy, unrequited love, and infidelity that would generate an impression of our collective insanity and endearing fragility. Our conversations would free us from some of our more distorted fantasies about others' lives. By revealing the extent to which, behind our well-defended facades, most of us are going a little out of our minds, and so have reason to stretch out a hand to our equally tortured neighbors. Thanks to the agape restaurant, our fear of strangers would recede. The poor would eat with the rich, the black with the white, the orthodox with the secular, the bipolar with the balanced, workers with managers, scientists with artists. The claustrophobic pressure to derive all of our satisfactions from our existing relationships would ease, as would our desire to gain status by accessing so-called elite circles.
Around 54 CE, Paul of Tarsus, also known by others as Apostle Paul, writer of many books in the Bible, started a church in Corinth, and it was struggling with a sense of superiority. People thought their calling, gender, ethnicity, class better than others. In an attempt to create harmony, he borrowed the idea of a cosmic man and applied it to his current situation. These are his words.
For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in the one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Greeks or Jews, slaves or free, and we were all made to drink from one Spirit. Indeed, the body does not consist of one member, but many. If the foot would say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear would say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body as well. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? As it is, there are many members, yet one body.
The great irony of the situation is that Nathan is playing with only one hand, and I would like to say that we had planned that whole thing out with talking about a body and hand and him playing with only one hand, but we did not. I must confess. I have another confession to make. I have written this sermon about 8 times now. If you count the first service, that made 9. As Gina can attest, I got home late from work last night at the restaurant I work at and promptly scrapped what I had prepared for today and was emailing her things at 1 o'clock in the morning. Sorry. Sorry to you as well. But here's the problem that I was faced. I've been writing this for some time, but every time I wrote something down, I wasn't happy with it. And as I was looking over everything, I came to the conclusion that the problem is that there's a certain permanency to paper and writing it down as solid argument. The impression being that I have thought this whole process through and that I've come to a conclusion and you will learn my wisdom. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Sometimes, you know, maybe, but today, not so much. So, if you've been to a Soulful Sundown, you know I like to talk off the cuff. I will do that this morning. I do have notes, so it's not terribly off the cuff. We will limit rabbit holes to small ones. But this whole conversation that I've been having with myself, which you are now privy to, because talking to oneself, I'm told, is a problem, but it started with an experience I had attending a class at Trinity Lutheran Seminary last semester. It was a class on shame, which all good people going to Christian seminaries must learn about for some reason, shame. And we were having a conversation about shame and poverty, and a young man in his wisdom, so he thought, said, well, when I come across a panhandler on the street, I don't give them any money because it's a systemic issue. I need to fight the systems. And if I just give this poor man on the street some money, I don't know what he's going to do with it, but I need to fight the system, and that will alleviate the problem. To which I promptly said, yes, but I bet he's hungry tonight. And this comes to this problem that I think that we have had probably since man evolved onto this planet, however many years ago. I'm a theologian, not a scientist, sorry. This idea of binary thinking, even in early interpretations of the Tree of Life in Genesis, there's this idea that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and Adam and Eve's rejection of that is a rejection of this binary thought and moving into a wholeness, a more comfortable place between these binary ends. Unfortunately, we still haven't learned. So we still argue in binary ways, think in binary ways. Common ones today are Christian, non-Christian, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, gay or straight. These are all binary ways of thinking which don't necessarily accord to the reality of individuals. For instance, what do you do with a bisexual Christian atheist? Right down the middle. You can't decide. I myself am Swiss, which is why I've always said I'm neutral in everything. But labels can be a good thing. Unitarian Universalism is almost renowned for our hyphenation of our identities and the labels that we put upon ourselves. If you go to a General Assembly, you will have tables for every form of Unitarian Universalism you can find. UU Christianity, UU Paganism, UU Buddhist, UU Muslims, UU Atheists. All sorts of Unitarian Universalism finds their expression in our denomination. And in one sense, that is a beautiful thing, and it shows just how wide and accepting our denomination is. But labels can also have a bad thing, and that is the problem is often when we hear someone's label, that is where we stop learning about them. We come into an assumption of what they are and what they believe and how they act based upon their labels. For instance, if you were to hear that someone is an evangelical Christian, that puts into a certain framework of who that person is. And if that's all you stop with, then you neglect to find out that she gives money to legitimate charities, that she gives more money probably than most of us do to charities, that she works and volunteers much of her time to alleviate many of the same things that we do. But if you hear evangelical Christian and you hear right-wing Christian nut job, then we've stopped at a label. And this is a part of what Alain de Botton is getting at with his agape restaurant idea of things, is that if we all sit down at a table and we're forced to eat with each other and we're forced to have a conversation, it forces us to remove the labels that we've put on each other. And it helps us accept not only our complexity, our way of identifying ourselves, but also explore the complexity of the other people across the table. The book, the liturgy, in a sense, that he envisions gets beyond the, hi, how are you, nice day, what do you do for a job, how many kids do you have, that's fantastic, and then walk away thinking that that is a deep, meaningful conversation. It's not. Instead, listen to the questions that he asks of his people. What do you regret? Who do you not forgive? What do you fear? These are deep questions that get to the deep part of our souls and our beings and who we are and how we identify ourselves. And so when we sit down and we actually listen to people and we get beyond the labels, then we start to understand who they are and we start to honor their humanity. And then strangers all of a sudden start becoming a community. No longer do we have rich or poor. I mean, we still have them, but they are sitting down and talking with each other. If you listen to his dichotomies that he's created, believer, non-believer, bipolar, stable, all sorts of different opposites, managers and their employees, they sit down at a table and are automatically level playing field because we all come with our own experiences and all experiences are valued. And Paul was not without his own divisions. Famous sort of binary thinking that we see in Paul, Jew or Greek, slave and free, were specifically in this passage. Male and female is often used by him as well. And these mark an early division that was happening even in the early church. I mean, Jesus himself even had problems with his disciples coming up to him and saying, which one of us is best? You know, so even from the very beginning, there were these divisions in the church. And Paul comes into the mix and he doesn't, you know, he adds even more division because here's this guy who never hung out with Jesus at all. And he's saying that he's as important as all these other guys. And suddenly starting churches, and these churches are creating division. And Paul's church has their own divisions. And Paul does this creative thing where he takes over this long historic idea of this cosmic man. From ancient Judaism to paganism, all these other sort of ancient religions have this idea of this cosmic being, and that in Judaism it comes in the form of Adam, and the idea that Adam was actually this giant person that filled the heavens down to the earth, and when Adam disobeyed God, all of that essence came back down and created this human being and lost sort of this image of God and this humanity of being divine. And in Hinduism, there's this idea of the Brahman, where we all are part of this larger being's process and thinking. And as we go on through our lives, we become more and more a part of it. So if we listen to his argument, that's where I'm going. There's the rabbit hole. Okay. He makes an interesting argument. He says, look, we are all individuals, but we are part of a larger whole with this body image. He says, okay, some of you are hands. It's great. Some of you are feet. That's great. Some of you are ears. Some of you are eyes. Some of you are lesser things, which we cover up, but we're all a part of this body working towards a larger goal. And it's this interesting argument of, in a sense, creating an equality amongst this community, or trying to at least, of saying that no part is better than each individual part, and the whole is what is important. So what Paul's goal that they were working towards was obviously the spread of Christianity. Now, Unitarian Universalism wrestles with evangelism. Should we? If we do, what does that look like? That sort of thing. So I don't necessarily think that our goal as the larger church body here or as a denomination is necessarily spreading the UU gospel, so to say. But I think if we look to our principles, we actually find some of our goals that we are working towards: justice, equity, compassion. The sixth principle has a nice phrase of saying, hey, this is our goal. So it is the goal of a world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. So these are our Unitarian Universalist goals. They're great things. Peace, liberty, and justice, equity, compassion, all good things to strive for. But what is the larger part that we're working with? Is it just a UU humanity? Is it a UU identity? Are we just all a part of a UU force going out? Or is there something larger? My argument would be that Unitarian Universalism is only a small part of this larger body, a sacred body of humanity, because we do not have the patent on charity, on righteousness, on justice work. Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, atheists all work towards charity and compassion and equity, and all of these people are working towards these same goals as a part of a larger humanity, as a part of a larger sacred human body. So what are our parts, though, if we are a part of this larger humanity? I think if we're honest, Unitarian Universalists tend to be a lot of heads, some hands and feet, not a whole lot of hearts, maybe some heart here and there, and some other things. You know, we tend to be intellectual. A lot of scientists are Unitarian Universalists. We tend to highlight justice, again, justice work, that sort of thing. And honestly, that's a part of what drew me into Unitarian Universalism when I first started coming here. I had just come back from studying at the University of Oxford for a year, and I was looking for a place that allowed me to be intellectual yet still fight for justice. And hey, Unitarian Universalism. So, I think it's a great thing about Unitarian Universalism, but I wonder if we have a problem where we forget about the other parts, or we judge the other parts, or we find it challenging to honor the other parts of our sacred human body. That is, those people who think with their hearts, or with their souls, or who maybe can only play the piano with one hand, or it's written in this case for one hand, so that's another story, but who only play with one hand, who only can do one thing or another thing, or who decide on their part in the body is not the hand, it's the foot. And we start looking down and we start saying, well, why are you this way? Why are you a foot and not a hand? Why are you an eye and not a mouth? Why are you not the body part that we are? Because our part is obviously better. I mean, to be honest, I chose Unitarian Universalism. I obviously think of everything out there, Unitarian Universalism is the best for me. It's great. I love it. But the problem is when we say that it is the best for everybody, or when we deny the larger part that Unitarian Universalism plays in this larger body of humanity. And if we take seriously the first principle, then there is an inherent worth in those we disagree with. And we have to find that inherent worth sometimes. It's harder. Sometimes it's easier in other people. Evangelical Christians have an inherent worth. I know for some of us that can be very hard to see. Even Brother Jed, who once yelled at me that I have AIDS as I was crossing the oval, has an inherent worth and dignity. True story, however, I do not have AIDS. So the true story is that he yelled at me. The false story is that I have AIDS. Does that make sense? Okay, that's a little confusing. I tried to fix that, but it didn't work. So even our enemies, even those we disagree with, even those we agree with, all have an inherent worth and dignity. I mentioned Hinduism before. They have in Hindi a word, namaste, If you live in the south, they speak Tamil there in India, and their language, they have a similar word called Vanakkam. Are you spelling that good? Okay. W-A-N-A-K-A-M. All right. So they mean essentially the same thing. And it is that the God in me, or the divine in me, welcomes the divine in you. And when you think about it, that is a really amazing place to start a conversation. Because if you are coming to a person who is your exact opposite, and you pause and you say, hey, the divine in me recognizes the divine in you, you're having a totally different level of conversation than you are if you just villainize or just focus on what we disagree with the other people. It opens up a whole nother level of conversation. It gets back to this idea that of Alain de Botton of having deep, significant conversations with people that we don't necessarily know, people who are strangers, people who we only see their labels. And when we come down to it, coming back to the panhandler that is ignored on the side of the street by the young man, even he is a part of our sacred body. Even he plays a role within our goals of justice, equity, and compassion. Even he has value as a human being. And when we ignore that, we ignore his own sacred humanity, his own divine place. So I wonder, I'm in this conversation in my head, is this a liberal problem? Because this young man, he is otherwise quite progressive. Do we work only for social justice, but we forget that social justice has a real daily face of somebody hungry on the street? Or do we only give money to the person on the street, but we forget that this is a systemic issue and does need systemic problems and significant systemic answers? And the answer is yes. We are not binary beings. Nobody is. So we cannot have binary answers. We have to somehow find and struggle with this middle road of working both for systemic issues and actually helping people eat day to day, take care of their everyday needs. And this is a challenge. For some people, they can only do one or the other. Maybe you only have the time to fight for social justice. You don't have a lot of money, but you have a lot of time. And so you throw in as much time as you can. Maybe you don't have a lot of time or money, but you give the money that you can to the person on the street because, hey, at least you have a roof over your head or heat or something along those lines. And for some of us, we are so blessed that we can do both. As we go forth, the problem that I would challenge, the challenge that I would give to you is this. Whichever one you are, or if you're something else altogether, honor that within yourself, but honor what the other people are doing. Because we're all a part of a body. We're all fighting for this larger goal, no matter where they are from. That is the conversation I have, where I'm at right now. Hopefully you can add to it later. Thank you.